Welcome to this week's episode of Atlantic Tales, when we'll visit the Tulla Stables Artist Studios, set up by the Clare Arts Office to provide workspaces for artists in the county. The Tulla Stables Artist Studios were established by the Arts Office of Clare County Council to provide workspaces for artists in the county. The seven artist studios are located in the idyllic setting of renovated stables built in 1812 by the local landowners, the Brady Browns. The coach houses and stables were assigned to local Protestant families attending church at St. Macaulay's Church of Ireland, now demolished but located across the road. The stables were acquired by Clare County Council in the late 1950s, but the building had fallen into disrepair. Siobhan Mulcahy has held the position of Arts Officer in Clare for almost 25 years now.
So yes, I would have started in late October 1999. It was a really exciting time for the arts back then. Glore was being built at the time, so that would have opened shortly after I would have started. So there was a huge buzz in the county in terms of the arts and those expectations around what having a magnificent performance space and arts centre like Glore would do for the county. So it's ironic, I suppose, you know, quarter of a century later, and now there's a beautiful new library and gallery almost ready to open on the Glore site as well. So it's great to see everything come full circle.
But your own interest in the arts in school, were you creative? Had you an interest in the arts before you moved into this position?
Yeah, I wouldn't have considered myself arty, but I would always have had an interest in, I suppose, the arts as we call them now. There would have been music in my family. I grew up in Limerick and there was quite a vibrant scene there at the time as well. Partly, I think, because of the art college, you just had an influx of young, very trendy, you know, students. And I used to be looking at them in awe a little bit. I wouldn't have done visual art in school. I would have done music all right. I used to love English. I used to love literature, poetry, reading. That huge love, I suppose, came from my mum's side, the music from my dad's side. And I would have been very involved in school in choral singing. We had an excellent choir. I went to Connacht na Leabhar in Limerick. So we had a beautiful choir there. And for the 6 years I was there, I would have been involved in that. So I had a very solid grounding, I suppose, and a huge appreciation of culture, but would never have thought myself to be arty or anything like that. So finished school and went down to college, did European studies and then on to business administration. So the trajectory was not going in terms of the cultural side of things at all. But then as I finished school, an opportunity arose for me to go down to Clonmel to there was a new centre opening there, the South Tipperary Arts Centre. So initially when I went down, it was on one of the 4C schemes at the time. So this would have been mid-90s. I would have gone to Clonmel and started initially as the editor of their START magazine, which stood for South Tipperary Arts. And that was my real first foray, I suppose, into it. So I would have been meeting people like yourself, interviewing people, doing profiles on artists and arts events, etc. And following that, then I went on and became the director of the new arts centre down there. So very exciting time again, brand new facility. There hadn't been anything like it in the town previously. So it was quite exciting in terms of programming. Now, a lot of it was primarily visual arts based. So it was mainly exhibitions, just literally because of the shape of the building. But we would have done other things as well. I remember we had a series of playwriting sessions and rehearsed readings where we would transform the gallery and local actors would come in and read new works. We would have had music, poetry readings in the space as well. So it was all very new and very energetic down there at the time. And there was a lovely buzz there as well. Gallaglass Theatre Company had been there for a number of years and they had an excellent reputation nationally as well in terms of the theatre that they were producing. Yeah, very fond memories of my time in Tipperary. So the role of Arts Officer in Clare was advertised. As much as I loved my time in Clonmel, my boyfriend or husband, as he is now, is from Tipperary as well. So that draw was there. But there was always a long longing to come home or to come back. So we're from Southeast Clare, down around the Partine area ourselves. So when the opportunity arose, I applied for the position. And as it happened, my husband's job was changing as well. So he was moving back towards Limerick and Galway side as well. So kind of the stars aligned, I think, you know, in terms of sometimes, you know, what's for you, as they say, won't pass you by. So absolutely delighted then when I was appointed. And there had been a gap in the role as well for a little while before I started. I often say this, Clare was the first county in Ireland to appoint an arts officer. That was back in 1985. So actually next year it's 40 years since the first arts officer was appointed in Ireland. And now there's one in every local authority, which is fabulous to see. Now, it wasn't me. It's Kay Sheehy, who's now with RTÉ as a radio producer. So she was the very first. We've had some great people after her. Trisha Callaly, God rest her. And Eugene Crimmins was there for a while as well. So as I said, there was a little break before I came in. So when I came in, it was almost like starting afresh again, in that I kind of was able to put my own shape on things. You know, obviously it was going out and meeting a lot of people and seeing where the gaps were, seeing where the strengths were. So it was, and as I mentioned previously, Glore was about to open around that time, you know, back in the late 90s. So it was a very exciting time for a newbie to come in, maybe with fresh eyes and look at things as well.
What do you remember of your first day in the role? Was it all meeting people and finding your bearings around the council building?
There was a little bit of that. I suppose I was pure green. I had come from an art centre which was a lovely supportive environment, in the sense that it was quite casual. I was the director there. I had a small number of staff, a very close team, and there was a board of directors there as well, who were all local, so all hugely invested in making it work. So coming from that sort of very close-knit type of employment situation into, you know, a large-scale organisation. I don't know if some of your listeners remember, but when I started, it would have been the old council building. It's funny how quickly you forget things when they're gone, you know. But I do remember going in, and Willie Maloney was the county manager at the time. So that was the first job, was to go and meet the county manager. Willie would probably kill me now for saying this, but he welcomed me as he would the gentleman that he was. And he said to me, and what's your own background, Siobhan? The first thing, I went in all apologetic going, well, I'm not an artist. And Willie went, oh, that's great. In the sense that he was looking for somebody, I suppose, that would understand and appreciate the administrative role of the office as well. And I suppose it is a challenge, because you're dealing with people who are creative, who have that natural talent as well. But, you know, there is the other side of the role as well, in terms of the admin and working in, you know, effectively in a local government environment. So it's kind of, I suppose, I had the skill set probably from my background in college, but also from managing the art centre as well, to marry the two. So from Willie then, I went over to meet the former county librarian, Noel Crowley. I was actually based in the library headquarters. I suppose that was a historic position, because Kay Sheehy would have been based there initially as well when the role was first created. And Noel Crowley would have been instrumental in getting an arts officer for the county, and indeed went down to serve his own time on the Arts Council of Ireland as well. Partly, I suppose, in recognition of his support for the arts in a local authority setting as well. So over to the beautiful building that we're in now for another few weeks at least, anyway, just across from Bindon Street, next to the clinic, as some of your listeners might know it. And welcomed with open arms, I have to say. Very like-minded group of people in with librarians who already have an automatic lean towards arts and culture. And Noel was wonderful. Noel, you know, his first thing that he said to me was, you got the job, now go away and do it. And that was the kind of the trust and the freedom that you were given, in the sense that, you know, he was there to support you, but it was yours to shape. And I'd like to think I've done that over the last number of years.
So as suggested to you, go and do the job, put your own stamp on it. Had you a plan when you arrived, or was it a case of, I'll check it all out and see what I can do?
No, there wasn't a plan. I mean, obviously I would have been very familiar with the county. I would have been familiar with some of the people in the county. But in terms of, I did take, and I was given the space and time, which was really, really useful, to actually go out and do a little bit of exploring and talk to people and to see where they perceived the gaps to be as well. Now, we would have had received guidance from the Arts Council as well, because they would have had, through their own arts plan, priority areas identified for development nationally as such. So trying to feed that in as the main funders as well, looking at their priorities and trying to match them with the priorities on the ground as well. And I suppose that was instrumental in the initial development of where we were going. But, you know, a lot of it as well was to do with the feedback and the reception that I got on the ground. I do remember that I wasn't long in the office when the disability group came in, Clare Leader Forum now, but it was Disabled People of Clare at the time. Yeah. And they came in and absolutely gung-ho to get involved in the arts, looking for ways that they could, and they wanted it today, you know, yeah, that kind of way. And from that initial approach to me and from discussions with them, that was basically where the Embrace Arts and Disability programme has arisen from. And for example, we're now working with 23 disability organisations all over the county, working with upwards of, I think it's almost 200 individuals with disabilities through those organisations on arts programmes every year. We would have an exhibition in Glore every year from what arises from that, and a showcase, because it's not all visual arts. We would have film and music as well, so it gives the participants the chance to show off the skills that they've learned, and have unearthed some incredible artists who in their own rights are exceptional artists, but they have the most amazing facilitation skills and ways of working with people to bring out the very best in them. So that's an award-winning programme that's running for a long, long time now, but would very much have been because there was a certain group that came and said, delighted you're here, what can we do together? So that's just one example of the reception that I would have got. But there was, you know, it was a voyage of discovery. I do remember hopping in the car, and the excuse was to go out and visit all the library branches just to familiarise myself with. But it was an excuse really to go out and to scratch the surface around the county as well. And it was on one of those visits that I passed the Tulla Stables and saw this building. And there's a picture there, but you can see an old picture that we have here of what the stables would have been like when the council would have acquired it back in the 50s. It's done by Hilary Gilmore. Now, when I first came here, Pat, the roof was actually gone. It's not in great shape in that photo, but it was actually gone when I first saw it. So it was used as a council yard. It was a depot, so it was full of gravel, and there was a few men of work signs thrown away as well in there. But I just remember the arches, looking at the beautiful arches and going, wouldn't they make lovely artist studios? Noel Crowley was with me on the day, actually, coincidentally, and his question was, what's an artist studio? So, you know, I explained to him, and straight away he was going, let's see if we can make it happen.
And there's a lot of history in this building, a lot of local history going back to the 1800s.
That's right, yes. It was a conservation build, obviously, because of the history. A lot of history and a lot of love from the people of Tulla for the building, great pride in it as well. But effectively, across the road was the old Church of Ireland, and these were the stables that catered for the local landowners who used to come to attend church at the Church of Ireland. So they used to leave the horses and carts here in the stables while they attended church. That's what they were actually built for. And there's a plaque outside, and you'll see that all those landlords and landowners, they're listed on them. They would have initially all clubbed together to build the stables to cater for their attendance at the church. And you'll also see as well, though the church isn't there now, but the walls, the external walls and the gates of the Tulla Stables, they're the exact same as the ones across the road. So when we were creating the studios here to facilitate the works coming in and all the civil works that goes with it, we actually had to take down the wall and the pillars, and every single one of them were literally numbered. And it was like a jigsaw. So and put back again. And so they've actually moved maybe 4 or 5 feet back from where they originally were, but they're in the exact same order and location. And even the gates go back to that time as well. And we had a fabulous architect working on the project with us, my namesake, Siobhan Mulcahy, who's from Tulla, which caused no end of confusion, as you can imagine. Siobhan got some very strange phone calls, I think, over the last number of years. But Siobhan brought on somebody to actually repair and repaint the original gates as well. So we were anxious to keep as much of the fabric of the building as we could. So all the walls that you'll see, they're all the originals, and the stone walls through the studios, as you'll see when we're marking around. But it is a new roof, but it was slated in Killaloe slate, which would have been the slate that was originally used on the building as well. So it was quite an undertaking, but certainly restored, I think, to its former glory.
So from the time that you and Noel Crowley stopped and had a look at the building and decided this would make a great artist studio, to the time that it opened to the first artist, how long did all that take?
It took a couple of years. I mean, I suppose the seed had to be planted as such, first of all. But we were lucky. We were very lucky in the timing, because there was capital funding for arts development at the time called Access 2 funding. Now, Glore would have come from Access 1 funding, so the capital development at that stage was looking at putting art centres throughout Ireland and developing the venues, shall we say, the venues network throughout Ireland. So Access 2 would have come up around 2002, I think it was initially announced, and it was again for art centres, but we had made the case that this was, you know, a centre for artists. And again, we were lucky in that we had a Clare minister at the time who had a lean, Sheila de Valera. But I think the project stood on its own merit anyway. And certainly over the years, I know the department have sent other people down to us in Tulla to look at what was done when others have looked to sort of replicate or come up with ideas for artist studios in historical buildings. So we would have, between applying for the funding, getting the funding, and then all the work that goes into that, I think it was 2007 when the studios officially opened and have been up and running ever since.
And won a few awards since?
Yes, there's been a number of awards. I'm just looking, the Lama Awards, that was in 2007. We won the Best Public Building in Ireland, which was incredible, because I remember being at the award ceremony, and sure, to us it was, you know, it was wonderful to be nominated, and we'd have a good night out as such on the back of it. We were up against the new maternity hospital in Cork at the time, so that was the category. And then they announced that Tulla was the winner, and there was a stunned silence in, I remember, and a colleague of mine, James Harrell, the former arts officer in Galway, was sitting way across the room. Galway were nominated for a different award, and as I said, there was a stunned silence, and James just stood up and started clapping going, yes, just wonderful to see. Not so much, you know, best public building, but that the arts would feature in that category even, you know, and that people could see an arts building to merit the recognition as well as any school or hospital or any other building as well. So so that was a great night, going back a long time now,
but it certainly would have been a shame to allow a building with such history and character go to waste.
Yeah. And I think it was, again, a lot of the time stars align, you know, like there hasn't been capital funding for the arts since then, which is absolutely incredible. And even though there are kind of talks of another round of funding coming out, it does look like that will go into invest into those facilities that are already there in terms of upgrading them, or, you know, all those buildings are 20, 30 years old now, so they need a bit of love at the moment as well. So had we been a year later, or, you know, this building would still probably be a council yard or something to that effect. Or it may have been renovated through a different scheme, but it was just, you know, of its time, I think. And we could make the case at the time as well that they were the only studios in Clare. Now others have popped up since, which is very welcome, but I suppose it was an innovative use of the building at the time.
Coming up, we'll hear more about the Tulla Stables Artist Studios from County Arts Officer Siobhan Mulcahy and meet two artists based there. Welcome back to Atlantic Tales. The Tullis Stables Artist Studios were established by the Arts Office of Clare County Council to provide workspaces for artists in the county. All seven studios are currently occupied while there's a waiting list for spaces as they become available. So what exactly goes on in the Tullis Stables Artist Studios and who can avail of the facilities there? Siobhan Mulcahy is County Arts Officer for Clare.
Since we've opened, we've had over 40 artists who have passed through the doors. When we opened initially, it was primarily visual arts, but that has expanded exponentially. So at the moment, as I'm looking around, we have somebody who restores furniture, we have painters, we have music recording going on, music recording studio, we have ceramicists. There's a huge variety happening at the moment in the studios, but over the years we've had everything from digital media, we've had filmmakers, we've had jewellery makers, we've had sculptors. And that's, I think, one of the key benefits of the studios is that we're able to accommodate such a wide and diverse type of art form. The reason that we would have received the funding in the first place, it wasn't to be a retail outlet, it wasn't to be another Kilkenny or craft outlet as such, it was to provide working space for artists, so somewhere that they could physically work, because while people might look at a beautiful painting on a wall, they don't necessarily see the paint spots that are on the ground why that painting was being created as such. So it was to give artists the physical space to actually create work, and in some cases to create large scale work as well, as many of them were working in rather constrained spaces, either at home or, you know, in other spaces that they might have, and to give them quality space, you know, where you had heat, you had light, the old adage of the artist in the garret, you know, we're trying to move away from that in terms of professionalising the work that artists do as well. So that was kind of where we were coming from when we set it up initially, and could probably never have envisaged how creative artists could be in terms of their use of the spaces and what they, you know, what they could be used for over the years. So as I say, we've had almost 40 artists kind of pass through. So the way that we've worked it is that artists, they're allocated a space and they can stay for a maximum of 4 years and 9 months. And the reason for that is because we do understand it takes time to move into a space, get used to a space, no more than moving house or anything like that. Yes. You know, you just need time to settle as such. But then it was also to give them enough time to create work, but also then to give them enough time to think about moving on and where they go after this, because it's not a studio for life. We have a huge demand for the spaces here in Tulla, partly because they're so wonderful, but also partly because there's just a huge demand out there for spaces for people to work in. So in many ways, we kind of see them almost as incubator spaces. Now, it's not saying that they're for artists who are just starting out, but just that they just maybe give that kind of a 5-year career comfort to an artist, in terms of they have the space, they know that they have it for that length of time, they can create work, and it also gives them a chance to maybe look to the future as to where and what direction that they could go in as well. And not all stay for the 5 years, Pat. We would have a number of people who have got in, and once they've got in, they've kind of gone, I need something like this at home. So you see the sheds going up in the back, or, yes, you know, it almost in some ways gives them permission to justify that investment, I think, in themselves as a career. You know, that yes, it obviously does cost money to create these studios, etc., but it's a working space, the way that a carpenter might have a yard at the back or something like that. So that's effectively what we've done. And we've had people who have been very young, who've been straight out of college, and we've others who might be older artists who are looking, you know, at this stage in their life to just have somewhere that they don't need to fret about heat or leaky roofs. And so it's been right across the gamut in terms of people and what they're doing and where they're doing. Primarily we serve the East Clare area, which has always been really, you know, there's a huge community, creative community out here, but more and more we have had artists who have travelled to take up the studios here as well. And that's great as well, because I think a really important part of the studios is facilitating networking amongst the artists and facilitating friendships to be built, but also just that peer networking that, you know, if somebody else is here, you can, you know, and you might be struggling with a painting, and what do you think, what would you advise, or, you know, just even to have the cups of tea and the chats and to build those relationships amongst people as well and sharing knowledge.
Cathal Butler is an artist who mainly paints landscapes in oils and has produced several collections for hotels around the country. He has previously exhibited at the Scariff Library Gallery, the Clare Museum in Ennis, and Cultúrlan Sweeney Gallery in Kilkee. He has a permanent exhibition on view in Tracy's West County Hotel in Ennis. Cathal is one of the artists based in the Tullis Stables Artist Studios.
Grew up in New Ross in Wexford, and then we moved to Limerick when I was 12. Went to boarding school in St. Charlotte's in Tuam. I was very good at art when I was young. In boarding school, they didn't have a teacher for art, and they put a nun in who didn't know any art. And it frustrated me because I was quite good, you know. But she was very clever. She came up with the idea that everything had to be modern art, which kind of got over the hurdle of her not knowing any art.
Yeah.
But it's like everything, it just wasn't taken seriously and put anybody into it. The first painting, we had to draw milk bottles upside down and inside out, and I thought, I've had enough of this. And I never drew again. And then when I went to, my last few years in secondary school were in St. Enda's in Limerick, and they didn't do art. But I just sat art in the Leaving Cert, even though I never had classes or anything, and I passed it, honours art. And then, in the back of my mind, I always thought, someday I'll draw again. And then went to London, worked my way up, and became an accountant in the city, and then just out of the blue started to see if I could paint, you know. It's in you when it's in you. I even noticed when I would produce in management accounts, I'd catch myself trying to make them look nice, and I think, God, this is crazy, you know. So I came back to Ireland, my parents were ill, and then I thought, I'm going to give it one try. And I thought, I'll do night classes, I'll do this, I'll do that. And then I said, no, if you're as good as you think you are in your head, you know, just do it. So I bought canvases, oil paints, and rented a house in Kilbaha, 4 miles to the nearest shop, and just went to work. I literally nearly let the air out of my tires to try and keep me there and do it. And the first picture sold for 500, and I was off to the races, kind of, you know.
Proved yourself that.
Yeah, proved, yeah.
Make a go of it.
And it's a unique way of doing it in that I don't sketch anything. If you look at that one behind you there now, I literally just go straight in with the oil paints. And it's kind of a scary way to do it sometimes, because it means every picture I do has to go through the stage of looking like what a five-year-old would do. And that's the time you're thinking to yourself, you know, can I really do it? But you can see with that one there, that's a commission. It's somebody's family home. That's how it starts. But then each time you drill down into it more and more and more, and it just starts kind of popping off the page then. And it's how I do them all, you know.
But the creative streak, though, where did that come from, do you believe, when
you were
so young?
Oh, it was 100% born with it. I mean, I just knew I could do it, you know. And there was no logic. After all those years stopping when I was 12 to think you could do it. When I'm painting, I'm not really thinking. You know, if you say to me, where did you get that colour from? I would have no idea. But if you put the paints in front of me, I'd find it instantly. Put them together, you know. And even when I'm doing a portrait or something, I kind of get a fright when they're looking back at me. It is innate, you know. And even the fact that I could catch myself presenting management accounts in a visual way, you know, was insanity for an accountant. But it just shows how much it's ingrained into you, you know. I also do work then I do virtual tours and video and photography for estate agents. So it's a lovely balance then, you know, it gets me out. I like technology, so it's nice to have that balance, you know.
Did you feel, or how did you feel when you were stymied at that stage, that point in your life where you had to give up the art? How did that sit with you?
Well, I just got so annoyed with kind of then putting somebody in teaching art who couldn't do art. I actually wanted to pursue it then, but then although I passed honours art, it was purely because I could draw. But 50% of the marks went for history of art. I just kind of guessed that. I don't know how I passed. But I applied for the art school in Limerick, and it was 1979. And the interesting thing was that up until then, they used to do an entrance exam where you'd kind of maybe do a still life or you'd do a life drawing or something. And this particular year, so many people applied, they decided that they would work off your portfolios and different things. And because we didn't do art in St. Edith's, I didn't have anything. So I tried to kind of draw things in a week, but I didn't get in. Who knows, you know, had I got in, where things would have gone. But in retrospect, I'm glad, because I think the wealth of experience I've got in other things, one, makes me really appreciate what I'm doing now. But secondly, and probably more importantly, I'm capable of marketing my stuff and selling it and approaching hotels and different things and coming up with different ways of putting packages together. Whereas I'm not sure I would have had that acumen to the art school. I think the danger with being an artist sometimes is if you're not that way inclined, where you can promote and do business and sell and have, you know, things in shops, whatever, I do prints in shops, you're sitting at the end of a phone waiting to see if a gallery is going to phone you back. You could be waiting a long time. You know, it's a very competitive world out there. So in that respect, I'm nearly glad that I just figured it out on my own and kind of got on with it, you know. What I plan to do with the pictures I have in the West County, so there's a permanent exhibition there of 15 pictures, 10 of Clare, 5 then of Venice Town. And they're permanently on display there and they're all for sale. With each of those pictures then, there'll be some information on each picture, you know, a little map showing where it is, so tourists can see whatever. And then there will also be for sale then these smaller ones here. Anybody going to the exhibition there can buy those. Eventually what will happen then is beside each picture will be a QR code. And so, for example, that Innes Abbey one there now, or that Kilbaha one, as soon as you point your phone at the QR code, you'll now be walking down the pier in Kilbaha, or you'll be inside Innes Abbey. And that QR code then will be on a collection of postcards as well, which the hotel will be giving to guests and things. And, you know, it's a nice thing to look at the picture on the postcard and think, wow, what's that like? And then your QR code, bang, you're inside the Abbey or wherever it is, you know. And then beside each picture then will be a smaller frame with headshots of people who have done video clips reminiscing on stories. And that's going to build up. And so that exhibition then, when it's completed and set up, it will then start to travel promoting. But I then intend to do that in other areas as well and have that kind of moving around, you know. And it'd be lovely to have that exhibition in Boston or somewhere where there's a big Irish community. And, you know,
you are certainly embracing technology. Yeah. QR codes and, yeah, 360 video virtual tours. Yeah, how important is that to the business?
I think it's just experiential. I think it's a lovely, I mean, you can use Google Maps and there's various things out there, but we'll say there's a picture of Kilkee Beach and this small stand here. So when all this exhibition thing is finished, you'll be able to look at that picture, point your phone at the QR code and actually be on the beach walking along. And I think that's fantastic. And I just think it makes art come alive. And I think it's the opportunity then to maybe attract people to exhibitions and things that wouldn't necessarily go to art exhibitions. So I think, you know, because the art world, I think, is very insular. I suppose because I'm not kind of really involved in that and I haven't gone through those channels, it's just a different way I look at it. And, you know, there's a lot of the public who like to recognize places and it brings back memories and things, you know.
Is it mostly landscapes and portraits you're doing?
Yeah, mostly landscapes and things, but I am doing a little thing now whereby it'll be like a kid's collection. You have a framed picture and on one side you'll see what looks like, it's hard to describe now, but there'll be a child outside the frame with her hands up and she's helping a dog come out of the frame. So when you buy the picture, along with it will be a little plastic kind of filament. So when you put it on the wall, the little plastic filament will show the little person outside the picture lifting the dog out of the picture. And there's a few of these kind of ones I'm doing. There's another one where there's an umbrella and somebody has actually shot through the frame at the top and it's gone out.
Yes.
And they're lovely little things kind of for shop windows and things. People get a kick out of it, you know. So there are a couple of little things I'm looking at doing, you know.
On the exhibitions, you have, yeah, that permanent exhibition in the West County, if you, yeah, go in the front door, left and right. Yeah. How easy or difficult is it to get space for an exhibition?
When you go to exhibition places and, you know, there's a waiting list and there's all kinds of things. And the first question, some of them will ask, like, what did you last sell? So it's a very commercial type thing, you know. And, you know, you have waiting lists sometimes for years and... So I kind of bypass a lot of those things. And I think you always have to, what I kind of learned in business as well, is you have to grasp every opportunity and you make things happen. You know, all of a sudden somebody sees something you're doing and think, and it brings you in a different avenue. But for example, the relationship with the West County Hotel, I used to go to bars and things and restaurants and I would they'd commission a picture, I'd do a big oil painting, and then what I would do is a collection of postcards of that painting with the business details on the background, and that would allow them to see the business details would be on the background. And it was a great way for businesses then to promote their product, and they would sell the postcards. And
you're promoting a local area.
Yeah, and also it's a lovely thing because if somebody receives a postcard from a friend from that particular wood, you're looking at there in Kilbaha, if somebody receives a postcard from a friend and you really like the picture and, you know, and your friend is telling you about this lovely hotel, you know, it's a great way of marketing and that. And I would do them one off, you know, and I'd do a collection for another hotel and whatever. And when I was delivering them then, I would use that as an opportunity to promote it to somebody else. I'd say, look, this, I'm just delivering this. And I called into the West County. There was a girl behind the counter. I didn't know who she was or whatever. Straight away went in telling my story and explaining and showing the picture. And at the end of it all, I kind of said, you know, that was very nice. And thank you, you know, for your kind compliments. And I said, and what do you do? Or she said, I'm the receptionist. And I said, oh, great, you know. And but she said, yeah, I think Patrick would like that, you know. And anyhow, next thing I got a phone call from Patrick or one of the girls in marketing to come in and see Patrick. And I came in thinking we were going to do a one-off one. And he said, yeah, I like it. I like the idea and everything else. He said, we're redoing one of the rooms, the Abbey Room. So I would need 10. Could you do 10? That started a kind of great relationship then. So I went all over Clare then. A lot of those pictures that you're looking at there, that one behind you there, you see on the floor, that's...
Kirkham Row.
Yeah, that's it. Well done. So what we did then was we did abbeys and churches, and that was how the Ennis one was done. And I sat down with Patrick then, and we looked for iconic sites all over Clare. We sat down with the pictures, and we decided which ones I would paint. And off we went, you know. So it was interesting thing there was just going ahead and not waiting to speak to a manager or the owner. And, you know, had I not done that and just tried to email and make an appointment, I'd probably still be sitting here wondering why, you know.
So it's important you put yourself out there.
Absolutely.
Put yourself out there in person.
Yeah, because what you never know is, you know, you learn something new, somebody's interested, and it just opens up different avenues, you know. So, yeah, but that was a good example of just pushing on, even when you're not sure there's any reason for it, you know. And
your workspace here in the Tullow Stables Artist Studios.
Yeah.
How long are you here and what's available to you here?
Yeah, so it's fantastic facility, you know. I had a studio in Tracklands Business Park, Easy Studios, and that's where I first started with Clare County Council in a place there. And then I'd heard about the Tullow Studios. I came up to have a look a few times. I thought, wow, wouldn't it be great to have one there? And then I did apply at one stage and I didn't get it, but I was on a waiting list. And then out of the blue, I got a call to say, yes, you know, somebody's left and you've got one. And so it really is a great facility. I mean, you can see it, you know, you couldn't get it better. It's a picturesque area itself, but the studios are so well laid out. You know, you've got all your facilities here, and you've got your upstairs as well, which I use for kind of storage and things. You know, it's just a fantastic amenity to have.
That was artist Cathal Butler, who is based at the Tullow Stables Artist Studios, where he also welcomes visitors. Coming up, we'll meet another artist working out of the historic building in Tullow. Welcome back to Atlantic Tales. The Tullow Stables Artist Studios were established by the Arts Office of Clare County Council to provide workspaces for artists in the county. The 7 studios are located in a former coach house and stables constructed in 1812 by the local landowners. The building was acquired by Clare County Council in the late 1950s. Anne Tyson of Altered and Eclectic is also based at the centre. She upcycles and sells rescued furniture and also works to commission, upcycling clients' own furniture.
I'm English. I grew up in Scotland. I've been in East Clare for 30 years. Just came to have a look, actually, and stayed. And I live up in Flagman. Growing up, the only thing I was good at was art. I struggled at all the subjects, and the only place where I felt happy was in the art room. So it was always something I enjoyed and wanted to do. And when I left school, I wanted to go to art college. And I actually couldn't see much further ahead. when going to art college. But it was actually when I was in school, the art teacher suggested textiles to me. She must have seen that in my work. So I studied textiles and fashion in Belfast. So I've always been interested in textures and pattern and colour and design. So that's where I started. And I worked in knitwear in Limerick for Caroline Mitchell for many years. It was after working for her that I started this business. And the skills that you use in making a knitted fabric have transferred well to upcycling furniture, because it's all about colour, shapes, pattern and texture. And it transfers from furniture the same as it does for knitwear. I source furniture, and when I'm sourcing furniture, I always look for pieces that are interesting, that have a bit of character. And then it depends on the condition of the piece, what I do with it. And depending on what it's made of, what I do with it. Because sometimes it's got a really nice piece of wood, so I'll restore the wood. But other times it's got like a damaged veneer or something. And then I would often paint it, because I can fill the veneer and then I can paint it and give it a nice clean finish.
And where would you source your furniture?
I have sourced my furniture from auctions and furniture traders and private sellers.
So when you see a piece, you go have a good look at it and be sure that you can work with it?
Yes. You see, because quite often people offer me pieces, but I can't take them because I haven't got the storage. And I know that it's going to be harder for me to sell it. See, if I have something that other people don't have, then, you know, it's more likely to be interesting for someone to buy it. But if someone's just offering me a pine chest of drawers, like, anybody can pick up a pine chest of drawers, so it's not special. And I like something with a bit of age and a bit of character. But that's just the furniture that I source. But you can bring me any furniture and I can upcycle that for you.
You're on the lookout for furniture yourself that you can work on and maybe hopefully sell on. But clients can come to you with something as well.
Yes. Any size or style of furniture you can bring along. And I can talk to you about the things you like and the styles and colours in your house. And, you know, if you're maybe redoing a room, we talk about, you know, the main colours and the other colours you're going to use, and we can make the piece
fit into your own surroundings. So are you watching auction sites? Are you watching social media for possible pieces you can work on?
Yeah, I look on social media and like Facebook Marketplace and Dundee. I'll look on those places, see if there's anything interesting comes up. And there are a few times I go on a trip to the UK and pick up a few pieces at once. The furniture in the UK, there's more variety and it's in better condition. I think people in Ireland were poorer and over the years, and they used their furniture until literally it went on the fire, you know, rather than in the UK. I think people had more money.
Are there more people online looking for these pieces, and do you have to jump in as quickly as you can to get a piece when you see it?
Sometimes. I find it really hard to find the dressing tables, because that's how I had a run of them, because I got a few in the UK. But trying to find a nice dressing table with Queen Anne legs is a bit of a hunt in Ireland.
But somebody, a client, might bring you something that they hope or think can be restored or fixed up or upcycled, but maybe not all the time. Maybe furniture is so badly damaged or so far gone that it can't be.
Yes. Usually I think you can just say to a customer, it is what it is, and it, you know, we can't make a miracle here. Mm-hmm. But I actually haven't had something that bad that the customer hasn't realized was bad. I did have a cabinet once that was quite bad, but she just wanted it to look nicer than it was, so I made the best of it. But she knew that, and so did I, so there was only so far we could go, and she was happy it was going to be a bright little piece in the corner of her room and look better than it had.
And what do you like working with in particular? You have a lot of chairs here, you have tables as well. Will you work on anything of any size?
Oh yes.
Oh wow.
I have yet
7 foot high
wardrobe. Yes, I have yet to do this wardrobe, but I think it deserves a new lease of life. I can do so much and then I'll have to have somebody in to help me move it around. Yeah, because even taking the door off has made it a lot lighter. What do I like working with best? I like anything with a Queen Anne leg. When I'm out looking for things, that's what I'm looking for. I like vintage pieces the best, with a little bit of shape and a bit of character, and sometimes like a little bit of texture as well. That's what I like. But I suppose I've had so many pieces that I've really liked for different reasons. Recently I had a nice washstand and it had like a beautiful marble top. So I restored the marble by polishing that up as well. It was a beautiful piece. But because it had the marble, we just did a plain finish on it. So we don't always have to have a decorative finish. Sometimes like a plain colour paint with a wooden top, or a plain colour paint with a marble top is sufficient. But because I suppose I'm a textile artist, I can get a bit carried away with the pattern.
And just on average, a piece to start working on from day one, how long would you spend on a piece?
I'd say 3 or 4 days from start to finish. 3 or 4 days wouldn't be 3 or 4 days solid work, because you would start off and you would clean it. And when you're cleaning it, you're looking for any faults that it might have. So then you're mending any faults, and then like sometimes you have to prime it depending on the wood, and then you would paint it, and then you would decorate it. So in between that, we have drying time. So, you know, you spend a few hours on it and then you'd leave it for drying time. So it wouldn't be solid 4 days, you know. That's what I'm trying to say. If you brought it in,
yes,
done
it
in 4 days.
It could be 4 days over a number of weeks.
Yes.
Will someone come to you with a piece they found in their parents' home or may have picked up at an auction themselves? What are people hoping to get out of an old piece of furniture?
I think when people bring it to me, it's often when they're redecorating their living room and they want this old piece to fit in with the new colour scheme, because it's a good solid piece, it's functional, it suits their house and it suits their space. But once they've decorated, it looks out of place, so they can come to me and we can make it like a little statement piece in the home and go with the new interior.
You have a number of chairs here, Anne, that you're working on at the moment.
I have a set of mid-century chairs that I'm working on, and I'm sanding them right down to their bare wood, and I'm going to give them a new finish. So I've done the main set, I've done the main sand, and now I'm going to do the little detailed sand where you get into all the nooks and crannies.
Will these take a while?
Chairs always take a lot longer than you'd ever imagine. Yeah, chairs. Everybody who upcycles furniture doesn't like chairs because they have so many sides to get into. A chair would take way longer than a chest of drawers.
I get the impression you're going to be working on these for quite some time.
I have been working on them for quite some time. I started by using a chemical stripper, and then I sanded them, and then I'm sanding them in detail now.
Tell me then about the Tullow Stables studio and how you got involved here. This is your workspace here.
I applied and I started my business, and I was working from home and I haven't got enough space to work from home. And then I was working out to someone's garage, and I applied for the studios, but I was told they were full up. And I literally completely forgot about studios. And it was 3 years later, but I got a message from Siobhan saying they were taking applications. So it's made a big difference being here, because before I was at somebody else's house in their garage. I was in a disused cafe, I was in a disused furniture shop. And having this space where public can just walk in off the street is just transformed it. It's made me so much more accessible. I really appreciate that I've got room for storage, room to display my work, room to work, and the public can access me whenever they want. I think it's a lovely building, and I really appreciate being here. I really do.
While there may be a waiting list for a space at the Tullow Stables Artist Studios, County Arts Officer Siobhan Mulcahy would encourage creatives to register their interest as spaces do arise. And while most of the county's artists will be aware of the work of the Arts Office in Clare, some may not have reached out to make themselves known. Siobhan says there are schemes and sometimes funding available to artists.
There are a number of supports that we would run, like the professional development of artists, again across all art forms, music, dance, theatre, would be something that we're very involved with. So we would run numerous webinars, networking events over the year, training for artists. We'd support artist bursaries to go to other retreats or research and development. We have a small grant scheme, and a lot of the time, you know, a lot of the work that we would do is to offer advice to artists as to where best they may be placed to go if they have specific projects in mind, or if they're looking to create work for an exhibition or to record music, to maybe direct them to the resource organisations that are best placed to help them.
Units will become available once in a while here, and you have a list of people hoping to get in here, but yeah. What are the criteria that someone would have to meet to be allowed work in your space here?
Yeah, so basically what we do is that we normally put together a panel of artists. So when vacancies come up, the initial one that's coming up now, we'll have a call out later in the year again to actually clarify just how many people are specifically interested. And from that, then we'll be able to say, well, we have space coming up in December. There'll be another one in next May. There'll be another one next September, which gives people the opportunity to plan as well for the moves. But in terms of the criteria, then we would be looking at people who are serious about their art. We would be looking at people who are looking to professionalise, or if they're not professional already. We would be looking for community engagement as well, people who might be interested in working with communities, not just in Tulla, but in East Clare in particular, because obviously from the council that would be an important interaction as well. And again, I suppose looking at not so much excellence in art form, but looking at potential. We'd like to support those that we feel would use the studios to the greatest potential, and those who will use this facility as well. We don't like having people who might just come once a week, or, you know, yes. We like to see them active as much as possible as well. Now, having said that, we're also aware that artists don't do 9-to-5s. And the wonderful thing about Tulla, because they're not shared studios, is that they can come and go as they please. So they can come evening times, they can come weekends, and that suits many artists also.
What's available to an artist here, and is there a cost involved?
So each studio has its own workspace, in the sense that there would be sink, hot water, there would be storage area. The studios in the line, shall we say, there's a little mezzanine, and upstairs is an area for storage as well. And those at the gable end of the facility, they have a double height space. So we would try to allocate them to suit the needs of the artists. For example, we've had photographers who preferred the double height space, whereas we have others who might be using a lot of materials who would prefer to have the storage upstairs. So we try and to align them as best as we can. And in terms then of the cost, so the cost is €185 per month, and that includes everything. So that includes your heat, light, electricity, you can come and go as you please. They're independent units. There's obviously bathroom and shower facilities here as well that are shared, but each unit is a lock up and leave as such. So if anybody wants to contact us about Tulla Stables or any of the other supports that we can offer, they can contact us through our website, clarearts.ie, or through our social media, which is all at Clare Arts Office.